Today's podcast is brought to you by Audible. Get a free audiobook download and a 30-day free trial at www.audibletrial.com/AOIS21.
Welcome to It's Not Even Past, a history of the distant present, hosted by Evan Tucker and the production of the AS21 Podcast Network. This podcast is available on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and audio.as21.com.
So we're all older now, and there's a whole new generation of literary fiction writers to be annoyed by. The very fact that Franzen is so out of step now from a literary country he did so much to define makes me feel like taking what he has to say a little more seriously. Love turns so easily into hate, and to be honest, the hate engendered by both Franzen and David Foster Wallace makes me think twice about them. It certainly doesn't make me more interested in reading David Foster Wallace when one finds out his long history of wretched behavior to the women closest to him. But it's slightly amusing that thousands of readers, not just the quote-unquote mansplainers who were always recommending him to women and who used to eat up his every word and were devastated by his suicide, seem as though they're vowing en masse to never reread his work. At very least, when readers have that complicated a relationship with an author, that means that his works are probably interesting. Even so, Infinite Jest is not my idea of a great way to spend a month. On the other hand, Wallace's journalism is far more interesting, and interesting in a way that a lot of later journalism is not, because it challenges the preconceived notions of its audience. One piece asks audience members to put aside their loathing of right-wing radio to consider the spectacular level of talent that goes into making it. In another piece, Wallace asks them to empathize with run-of-the-mill middle Americans at an Illinois state fair, all of whom would probably vote Trump a quarter of a century later. There was his piece on John McCain, which examined the phenomenon of how McCain got so many 2,000 liberals excited about highly conservative notions like national greatness and honor and sacrifice. And then, of course, there's the lobster. I've tried Infinite Jest at least twice, not very hard. One day I'll make a more serious effort, but it never called to me. Perhaps Wallace's natural home, like the natural home of many novelists in this extremely unnovelistic age, is journalism. Wallace's long-form feature writing is magnificent, conversational, urgent, with incisive points that always compel the attention span. But except perhaps for Consider the Lobster, which I won't even describe, just read it. All of these pieces are so antithetical to the spirit of 2020 that it should come as no surprise that the very same audiences who thrilled to Wallace at 20 now turn against him at 40. Perhaps in some way Wallace knew what was coming for him, and having devoted so much time to resisting his inner voice telling him what a monster he was, he could not abide hearing that voice in externalized form telling him what he thought he knew about himself all along. Though that's probably reading far too much into a suicide that will never truly be understood, except to say that Wallace battled severe depression for decades. But depression does lift eventually, and whether in a year or 50, the pendulum eventually swings back. Whether or not the audience includes me, Wallace will find new and appreciative audiences. He already has. And his most appreciative appraisers in the late 2010s seem to be a number of Christian publications. But with Franzen, there's none of the really high drama of Wallace's biography, and indeed, perhaps partially out of personal experience of watching Wallace's demons, Franzen seems to do what he can to avoid exactly that kind of drama. He's notoriously shy about media pronouncements, and yet whenever he goes into the media, it attracts enormous attention because of the controversy he engenders, pun intended, I suppose. When Oprah gave Franzen her endorsement, effectively making his career forever, Franzen did everything he could to turn it down. People thought he was monstrously ungrateful and scornful of an appreciative public, but think of all of those American celebrity novelists. The stress of being a celebrity to more than 20,000 core readers can kill creativity. Think of Salinger, Ellison Fitzgerald, Margaret Mitchell, Capote and Harper Lee, David Foster Wallace. You go to public readings where you're treated like a rock star by literally thousands, and then you have to be able to go home and spend years at a time by yourself trying to recapture the flame you'd been able to conjure in a colossally different set of life circumstances. The pressure of writing big books may have killed Wallace, or maybe it was knowledge of the media firestorm which would eventually burn much of his colossal public esteem. But in the face of whatever similar pressure, Franzen churned out 3 mega novels in 15 years and seems to have a 4th one on the way, which will apparently be his final novel. I doubt a big novel is ever without its troubles, but compared to his famous friend, to whose name Franzen is always connected, it seems as though big novels with big questions are as easy for Franzen to expectorate as a loogie. Freedom, on the other hand, does not seem nearly as great a book to me. At the time Freedom was released, only 9 years ago, everyone spoke about how Franzen reground American novels and old notions of character and plot. But what strikes me in 2019 is how much information overload there is. There is a never-ending series of plot points whose complexity is serpentine, and whose point very well may be to elucidate the mind-numbing complexity behind which many businessmen hide their malfeasance. But as I found out when writing my own novel, portrayals of complexities do not make for great storytelling unless you can find a way to evoke their opacity without succumbing to the opacity. This is the oft-stated complaint about novels of that generation, Wallace, Franzen, Zadie Smith, and going further back to Thomas Pynchon and Dom DeLillo. About 5 years ago, Franzen drew all kinds of fire for saying that Twitter is the ultimate irresponsible medium that reduces everyone's capacity for thought to the size of a soundbite. Let's leave aside that, of course, America's preeminent writer of long novelists in our generation was going to believe that. But 4 years later, a demagogic would-be dictator won a presidential election with vast aid from a Twitter feed. 3 years after that, there's little sign that this Twitter bag era will end well for anyone but a handful of billionaires, each of whom might have rebellious daughters who disown them anyway. That's a reference to the book Purity. And then, of course, there's the issue of misogyny in Franzen's writing. In some ways, Franzen was in a tough bind. He was called out for having privileges which women writers lack, and he immediately acknowledged its truth. What else could one do with a notion that's so obviously true? When Freedom came out, it was practically a month-long release party in the New York Times. But Franzen then noted that the accusations were coming from romance novelist Jennifer Weiner and Jodi Picoult, both of whom can complain about their lack of critical approbation to their millions of dollars in sales. To me, the problem is sort of framed by everyone backwardly. Why the pretense to the belief that writers relegated to genre ghettos have the same creative freedom as literary writers? I've never read either, to be quite perfectly honest, but Jodi Picoult is considered a relatively serious middlebrow writer, but Jennifer Weiner is a romance writer. Like any genre, there can be an astonishing amount of quality packed within it, but there's a pretty obvious beginning, middle, and end to that kind of book, and only so many variations. Weiner has earned lots of praise for her eloquent evocations of women's issues, and there is no question that literature has never had enough place for it, while writers who glorify ultra-masculinity, like Ernest Hemingway, Henry Miller, and Norman Mailer, were treated with extreme intellectual seriousness, and often wrongly so. But the best of the best take in the entire human experience. Men, women, children, the elderly, rich and poor, the exploiter and the exploited, the living and the dead. All of them held in a balance sheet of their strengths and weaknesses to evoke both compassion and contempt in the reader. And meanwhile, very good genre fiction writers like J.K. Rowling and Barbara Taylor Bradford already make exponents more money than Franzen ever will. So in that sense, this liberal male, who at least means well, will find it a little difficult to feel too much sympathy. On the other hand, the problem is clearly that a woman who wants to write serious fiction will necessarily find her opportunities systemically limited, and therefore will often be relegated to making a much more probable success for herself within a genre ghetto. And that is very much a problem. It's a non-starter to say that women and Western minorities were writing the same quantity of great literary fiction as white men in any era before ours. But even today, if women and Western minorities were writing the same quantity of great literary fiction as white men, the problem wouldn't be nearly as urgent as it clearly is, because it means that they are getting the same amount of opportunities and the system is ultimately not weighted against them. But the system is weighted against them, and because of the frustrations inherent in systemic bias, which most certainly exists, many of the most talented women writers and writers of color, to say nothing of writers of altering sexual and gender identity, simply give up their literary dreams, or are still forced more often to dilute their work for commercial considerations, or, if they even get to the pages of a book review, get critical pens that misunderstand their work and compels them to compromise their vision on later work. I realize that there is a minefield of controversy one has to wade through to present these points, but the point ultimately is to create a diverse world where the opportunities of present and future are properly weighted to equal distribution of resources for talent in all directions. So is Franzen a misogynist? We'll talk about that next week. But first, cats.
Much of what happened, what is discovered now, will of course be secret. We will not be given the full answer.
This has been It's Not Even Past, a history of the distant present, hosted by Evan Tucker, a production of the AS21 Podcast Network. Find this and other episodes on Podomatic, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Stitcher Radio, TuneIn, and our home on the web, audio.as21.com. Find us on Facebook at facebook.com/itsnoteven past. That's it for this episode, but we'll be back, because the past isn't dead, it's not even past. If you like this podcast, consider becoming a patron of the AS21 Podcast Network. Visit www.patreon.com/AES21 and donate today. Any amount will unlock special perks, including bonus episodes and behind-the-scenes tidbits. That's patreon.com/AOIS21.
Copyright 2019, AS21 Media, LLC, all rights reserved. AS21 Media. What do you want your story to be?